Good morning. It is still morning. It's now 11:07. The board is back in session after a brief break. We'll do a short roll call or a swift roll call to make sure everybody is present. Dr. Bastide?
Here.
Dr. King?
Present.
Ms. Young?
Here.
Mr. Greer?
Here. I do know we still have that echo.
Yeah. Mr. Barton?
I'm here.
Ms. Crowley?
Here.
Ms. Bryant?
Here.
Ms. Richardson?
Present.
Ms. Sinish?
Here.
And Mr. Harris is also present. My name is Judy Chepius. And Dr. Bastide, the meeting is yours. We were on agenda item 90.
Okay, so we're at now case 2391, Angela Hall, PT.
Hi. Yep, this is Angela Hall, who is represented by Ann McClellan, and I believe both are present.
Yes, good morning. This is Ann McClellan.
Morning, Ann.
Morning.
Good morning, Ms. Hall.
Oh, good morning, Ms. Hall. This case is related to Ms. Hall being arrested and charged with DUI on October 24th of 2023. Her blood alcohol level at the time of her arrest was 0.233. She did self-report her arrest on December 27th of 2023, which was not within the 10-day regulatory requirement. She states that this was her first offense, and she accepted a plea agreement for extreme DUI and completed the required jail time. According to Ms. McClellan, she has completed all the terms of her plea other than the interlock device, which was scheduled to be completed last week. She's completed, paid all the fines and has a payment plan for the court fines and DUI fees. She stated she will be returning to Colorado, where she now lives and works as a director of clinical affairs running clinical research studies, so she's not in direct patient care. Ms. Hall and Ms. McClellan received a copy of the investigative report and did provide a supplemental response, which was included in your review materials as Exhibit 3. Board staff identified the following potential violation, ARS 32-3208, which is the mandatory reporting requirements. This case is for your review.
Ms. Hall or Ms. McClellan, would you like to make a statement?
Yes, thank you. Yes. Good morning to all the board members. It's accurate that Ms. Hall did not report the DUI within the 10 days. It was simply something I know you guys commonly see, not understanding that you report at the time of arrest as opposed to the time of a plea or conviction. Not trying to hide it from the board, obviously, when she learned of it, she reported it. She has not been in patient care or used her PT license for 8 years. She's been doing the clinical research, more administrative roles since then, which I think is maybe another reason it didn't get reported. Probably within the 10 days, it wasn't at the forefront of her mind, so she's not using her PT license. But nevertheless, it was a mistake that we don't think rises to the level of needing a violation or discipline. We provided letters of support from people who have worked with her closely to show you that this really is not, it's never been something that has affected her performance at work. She's never had a complaint that she's been under the influence. This DUI happened outside of working hours. It didn't involve at all her time at work, and certainly not even the performance of physical therapy or patient care. She's already faced very serious repercussions for the mistake that she made through the criminal court system. As part of taking the plea with the DUI, she had to have an assessment done through the court system, and it was determined that given this is her first offense, the one-time incident, she would be required to do 72 hours essentially of education. She's already completed, as we said, the 8-hour MAD course, the 8-hour driving course. She did 32.5 hours of outpatient therapy, and she's just waiting for the court to give her the go-ahead as to what whether the rest of what she's done through counseling and education will be approved to complete that 72 hours. So she did all that on her own. That was not through me. That was her taking the initiative to get that done as soon as possible through the court system. She also, to make sure this doesn't happen again in the future, she's continuing to seek her own treatment with therapists and specialists to ensure that she doesn't repeat the mistake. As we said, there's never been a complaint from any employer, patient, coworker that she's been under the influence at work. This was truly the one-time criminal arrest, one-time incident. We believe she's done enough through the criminal court system to show that she's not a danger to the public, especially since she's not currently and hasn't for 8 years used her license. She has, since I last talked to Ms. Richardson, the interlock device is in place. It's done. She is in Colorado. She did the 3 days of jail time and she did the 11 days of house arrest, which was all part of that plea agreement. So we would just suggest that this is one of those cases where we think you can dismiss it since it doesn't involve her use of her PT license, or at most put an advisory letter into her file so that if in the future she is using her PT license or has another criminal arrest, you can take that into consideration that this was something that came before you in the past, but there's no pattern here that we think rises to the level of a violation or needing to do anything more than that. So thank you for your time. She's open to questions as well. I am too. So we'll turn it over to you unless you have questions.
Thank you very much. Does anyone have any questions for Ms. All?
Is there any plan to be going back to physical therapy?
No. I've been in clinical research for the last 8 years, and that's where I plan to stay. I ran the hospital circuits for 20, 25 years, so I like the direction my career is going in right now with clinical research.
So is there a reason then, I mean, I guess I'm trying to understand why you're maintaining the license if you haven't practiced in 8 years and you're not planning on coming back and you live in Colorado.
I'm in Colorado briefly. I will be hopefully returning to Arizona in the next couple of months. My PT license is part of who I am. I mean, I've been a PT for, almost 30 years now. It's part of my identity. It's something I'm very proud of. And just my PT license is not something that I want to get rid of. It's just part of who I am.
Okay. Thank you.
Ms. Hall, can you tell us what happened on October 24th, 2023?
Yes. I've had some pretty significant life changes in the last 6 months to a year. There were some issues with home and there became some issues at work. There was some change in leadership and the culture really changed. Just had an extremely overwhelming day and made some really poor decisions. You know, it's something I am not proud of, an extreme disappointment to myself, that I let the day get away from me and just really made some bad choices.
And I thank you for that, but I want some more specific details, you know, who you went out with, you know, I really want to understand how it came to be, because when we see a lot of DUIs, we don't see a lot of point twos. And so just let us know so we can have an understanding. One, what happened, and really we want to make sure this doesn't happen ever again.
So I had actually gone to an AA meeting and was by myself afterwards, very self-isolating due to what was going on in my personal life. You know, I chose to drink on my own after that meeting. The meeting also was very difficult, brought up a bunch of things that I was dealing with personally. So I made that choice to go drink alone. And hadn't really eaten that afternoon, which did not help at all. So it was a very emotional decision, obviously not a well thought out mentally, decision. It's not something I would ever have thought that I would have done, in my career. So, I think it was just kind of the perfect storm. You know, a lot had gone on at work that day. It was a very difficult AA meeting. There were people at my house that were visiting. So I just was upset and did not want to go home immediately.
Thank you for that.
Ms. Hall, how are you feeling now about your support, your sobriety? Do you still have a good support system? Are you still involved in AA?
I am. I am actually in an inpatient treatment program right now. I decided that given what happened on that day that I needed additional support. So I made that decision by myself to seek additional, more involved intense therapy. I did go back to, after my DUI, I immediately called, the outpatient, intensive outpatient therapist that I had worked with. And within 5 or 6 days of the, DUI, I started attending outpatient therapy again, 3 times a week and also with my therapist there, before I moved to Colorado. So, I've been very proactive in understanding that these are things that I need to jump on. Very quickly, and seek help immediately, which is what I've done. I didn't even think about hiring a lawyer, I think, until February. And as she stated, I just wasn't aware of, and that was on me. I should have known. I've never dealt with a board before. I've never gone before a board before. I'd been arrested but not convicted, and it just didn't occur to me that this was something that I needed to report to the board, but I did start all the things that I knew that I needed to start to get myself back on track.
Thank you.
In your clinical research, Ms. Hall, do you work with patients?
No, ma'am. Okay. I worked more on the administrative side, helping to set up the trial, running the clinical trial, managing managers that are running the clinical trial. There's no direct patient contact at all. In fact, that's a violation for me to be even in contact, so I'm only in contact with the clinical coordinators at the sites.
Do we have any other questions? Would you like to make a closing statement, Ms. Hall or Ms. McClellan?
I'll just very briefly. You have before you a licensee who doesn't use her license, but certainly cares about maintaining that license. You have a licensee who this is the first time and only time incident, and when it happened, immediately was proactive to do all the things that I think you as board members would hope that someone takes the initiative to do through self-awareness. And that not only is AA, but she immediately went to outpatient therapy. She did all of the terms of her plea. She's currently in inpatient therapy, even though no one has required that of her. She's taken that upon herself. She's been able to control any issues that she had with this relapse that they didn't affect her work, but she still has done the work personally that we think that there in this situation isn't more that the board needs to impose upon her than she has already done through the criminal justice system and through her personal. And so we ask that there not be that blemish on her license, given all of that she's done proactively. And given that she wasn't using her license and this didn't affect her work or any patients or public safety in that nature. So thank you.
Great. Thank you. So thoughts from the board?
I think probably appropriate for a letter to serve the license shall be aware of Mark Harris what it's
whatever Mark Harris it is.
Yeah. I'm sorry, Josh. I'm hearing an echo, so I didn't quite hear you.
Yeah, what's the statute, the 10-day reporting? I'm sorry. Blanked.
Bear with me one moment and I'll get that for you.
I got it. ARS 32-3208.
Thank you.
I was going to say 36-3608, so I'm glad you got it first.
I'm going to second that. I would agree that a letter of concern or advisory letter is appropriate here.
I would agree as well. I don't think that this rises to disciplinary level, or I don't see a concern for patients, obviously, with or not working with patients, you know, at this time.
And I agree with Gianni. Yeah, this one's closer than I would the normal one we have, just because of the licensee's experiences with alcohol. But the fact that she is not a treating provider, I think we can get away with just an advisory letter here.
Yeah, I agree. And frankly, she's doing, you know, she's doing the things that we normally are looking for. So I think that's positive. And I'd like the letter just in case there's, I mean, if it comes back, I'd like to be able to consider it and think about it. And I think that's how we do that. But as we sit here today, I think that's probably appropriate. So.
Any other discussion? Okay, I think we're ready, Judy.
It's been seconded. ACE 2021, Angela Hall, PT, to issue an advisory letter reminding Ms. Hall of her duty to report in accordance with ARS 32-3208. Dr. Bastillo.
Yes.
Dr. King.
Yes.
Mr. Leone.
Yes.
Mr. Greer.
Yes.
Mr. Barton.
Yes.
That motion passes.
Okay, best of luck to you, Ms. Hall, and all the work that you're doing.
Thank you very
much. Thank you very much.
Appreciate the support.
Thanks.
You're welcome. Okay, so we will move on then to preliminary review of CK.
Okay, and I'm not sure if CK is present, but good morning. On September 2nd of 23, CK was arrested for assault, domestic violence, disorderly conduct, and preventing the use of a telephone as it relates to domestic violence. He self-reported the charges on 9/12, which was within the 10-day regulatory requirement, but given that the arresting violations were within the reportable misdemeanors, that's why it's before you. He provided a written statement and supporting documents for your consideration. He states he is almost done in completing all the court-ordered requirements, and actually I think he may have completed them as of today's date. And he has maintained his sobriety since his arrest. His next court hearing is April 11th. And then this morning, he had sent late last night some additional documents that included, I'm pulling them up, his attendance records for, he has participated in individual teletherapy, anger management, and domestic violence offender men's group since September and continuing through March. His attendance has been good in all three areas. And the other document that he sent to me was a summary from his clinical supervisor in those programs, which looked like he had made quite a significant improvement in his scoring in the anger management area. So this case is before you to determine if you want to take any action in this matter. But he did report within the 10-day requirement. So this case is
thank you. CK, would you like to say anything to the board?
At this time, what I provided is exactly what I would tell you guys for your time.
Great. Thank you. Would you be willing to answer any questions?
I am.
Does anyone have questions for CK?
CK, have you ever had any issues in your professional life or with patients regarding anger management or these kinds of things?
I do not.
What do you think you've learned from this experience?
It's definitely been life-changing, but at the same point in time, it's just an opportunity to be proactive and be better. It's been a lot of self-improvement, a lot of reflection as well. So I'm on a better path.
Thank you.
Thank you.
CK, are you currently working?
I am.
Okay. And that's going well for you?
Extremely well. I absolutely enjoy what I do. I'm a director of rehab.
Any other questions? Okay. So now the question is, what, if anything, are we going to do?
I would like to suggest thinking of the time. I know that's a lot, but we have so many that don't. So thank you for reporting in the 10 days. I'm inclined to take no action. So I'll make a motion that we take no action.
Second. I feel like you're doing everything that is certainly been asked, and then some, and so.
Thank you.
Any other discussion on that?
No, I think I would agree.
Okay, I think we're ready, Judy.
It's been moved and suspended in matters to take no action. Dr. Basile?
Yes.
Dr. King?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
That motion passes.
Best of luck to you, CK, with your continued work.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll move on to last preliminary AS.
Is AS on?
Good morning.
On February 11th of 2024, AS was arrested for assault, disorderly conduct, third degree criminal trespass, and resisting arrest. He self-reported the charges on March 1st, which was just past the 10-day regulatory requirement for reporting. He has provided a written statement for the board's consideration, but his first court hearing is going to be April 12th of 2024, so it's just underway. You may decide to open a case with a potential allegation of failure to report within the 10-day requirement and kind of monitor the case as it proceeds, or take no action. This case is for your review.
AS, do you have a statement or something you'd like to say to the board at this point?
For the 10 days failing to report, I was going through a lot through this because I've never been in trouble with the law or anything like that. So once I was shopping around for counsel, they immediately told me that I had to report, and I immediately reported that same day. And it was, I believe, Mrs. Richardson told me I was just outside the 10, but it's good I self-reported anyway before it got back to the board. So just wanted to state that I did immediately report when I knew I had to.
Would you be willing to answer some questions?
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, ma'am.
Great. Thank you. So can you tell us what you've learned through this experience?
So I've learned more so how to, I guess, deal with interacting with the police. The incident in itself was, it was an incident that was started by someone else, but they deemed me as like a, I guess, a part of it as well. But more so, I was trying to defend myself from extra harm. So I guess from what the security told police, they didn't see what happened beforehand and the restraint that I showed, because I could have acted way outside of bounds, but I tried to just protect myself and hope security would see that this person was out of bounds. But I've more so learned how to just be, how to interact with people. I was being courteous to this person from the beginning, but it seems like alcohol played a factor for him. So just, I've learned just to keep being myself with being polite and respectful. I can't really control how other people act, but I can still continue to be the person that other people know that I am.
Anyone else have questions?
I have just one question similar to what Josh has asked in the past. So, Mr. Smith, have you ever had any problems with anger at work, with patients, coworkers, other staff, any altercations?
No, ma'am. And as soon as this happened, because as a result of two of the charges, the fingerprint card got suspended. So I immediately have put in for the good call exception, and I got more than the allotted amount. I had like 5 recommendations that could talk to my character at work, my character as a person, and how this is not being representative of what I am. I also have my attorney working on this to clear my name, trying to get the video from where this occurred to show that I was not the instigator and was actually the victim of what was going on.
Thank you.
I don't have any further questions. So my inclination is to take no action. I feel like this is similar. It's on. I know he missed it by a day, but that's close. And it seems like as soon as he knew, he took action. I don't know. I mean, I'd be open to a letter of concern if we feel like that's helpful. But that's kind of where I am.
The only reason I would disagree, and I would be more wanting to send a letter of advisory, is because that's typically what we've done in the past, whether it be a day over or several days over. I don't think it's any reflection on his situation, obviously, but, you know, definitely want to make sure that we have an understanding on when reporting needs to happen.
Yeah, I think you'd have to open a case for that because this is a preliminary review.
If I'm not mistaken,
I defer to Mark on that, but
I'm not sure.
But I can totally see your point.
Yeah.
And my count, it's 4 days, not 1 day.
We've done that in the past. We've opened a case and then sent an advisory letter. So it was opened and then finished. And so I think if you're going that way, Giovanni, that would be your motion to open a case and then send an advisory letter, and then the case is sufficed. It's non-disciplinary.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I just feel like that's what we've done in the past, and we should probably mm-hmm. keep with what we've always done.
And I'm not super opposed to that direction. I think there's definitely an argument for consistency.
Yeah, I'd agree that being consistent is advisable for sure.
So I guess I can make that into a motion. I would move that we open the case and then issue an advisory letter to make sure to report within the 10-day
period. I second your motion.
Any further discussion? Okay, I think we're ready, Judy.
My notes just disappeared, so bear with me. It's been moved and seconded in case,
preliminary review
for AS to open a complaint and then to issue an advisory letter reminding of duties to report in accordance with ARS 32-3208. Dr. Bastillo?
Yes.
Dr. King?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
That motion passes.
Good luck to you, AS, and getting through all of the things you need to get through for this case.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, so we can move on to item 10 now, PT Compact Matters. Emily Haw, PT.
It looks like on the call today. Emily Haw, physical therapist, renewed her Arizona PT compact privilege, but did not take and pass the Arizona jurisprudence exam, as is required each time a compact privilege is renewed. She was given a 30-day grace period to successfully complete the exam. She registered, paid for, and was granted eligibility to take the exam. However, Ms. Haw did not take it within the 30-day grace period and still maintained an active PT compact privilege. She voluntarily surrendered her AZ compact privilege on March 13th, 2024. This matter is for your review.
So is there anything that we need to do because she surrendered her compact license?
This is similar to a preliminary hearing. There hasn't yet been a complaint opened. The matter is brought to the board simply on the basis of the notice of non-compliance. Includes that if they do not comply within 30 days, that the matter is brought before the board. In the past, you've issued a letter, not an advisory letter, but just directed staff to send a letter advising the individual of their responsibilities in accordance with compact privileges, but that's up to you to choose whether you want to continue that or not.
I mean, I would support that, and because she's applied for a compact license here for some reason once. And so if she's with a travel agency or something, she may do it again. So I think sending her I would support sending her a letter reminding her to make sure she follows all the instructions.
I would support that as well.
So then would the motion be to take no action but direct the board staff to send her a letter, perhaps? That would that be what we need to do?
I think, like last time, we probably have to open a complaint, send a letter, and then close it. Is that correct, Mr. Harris?
I think this case is a little bit different in that we really don't have jurisdiction over her. So I think it's not about even opening up a case or taking no action. Okay, it's just good. Directing staff to send a kind of an educational letter.
Okay. Then that will be my motion, to direct staff to send an educational letter.
Yeah, and Judy, is that consistent with prior board practices?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Okay.
Is there a second?
Second.
Was that Mr. Leon? Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Thank you.
Any further discussion? Okay. I think we're ready.
It's been moved to direct staff to send Ms. Ha an educational letter reminding her of the requirements regarding Arizona jurisprudence requirements as well as PT compact privileges in the state of Arizona. Dr. Bisti.
Yes.
Dr. King.
Yes.
Mr. Leone.
Yes.
Mr. Greer.
Yes.
Mr. Barton.
Yes.
That motion passes.
Okay, so on to number 11, old business. We have case 2243, Ryan Augustin, PTA.
Yes. So this matter is coming to the board for a little bit of clarification. At its September 29th, 2023 meeting, the board issued Ms. Augustin a non-disciplinary order for continuing education. And since that time, Ms. Augustin has been seeking continuing education courses to satisfy the terms of her order, yet due to the specificity of the continuing education, which was required to be 3 hours in supervision specific to Arizona or the Model Practice Act. Finding those courses has been a bit difficult. Ms. Augustin has submitted multiple courses from a variety of providers. I have also researched a couple of opportunities that I thought may exist, but later found that although they once had, they no longer do, to help satisfy this specific term of her order. So in addition to completing a variety of courses for documentation, she was ordered to complete 3 hours in record keeping. She completed 5.25 in that subject area. She also searched out information courses through APTA, and she did end up joining the Arizona chapter of the APTA as well. She found a few articles from the House of Delegates with direct supervision and physical therapist assistant, as well as a PT in Motion magazine article regarding supervision requirements for PTAs and students. She's read both of those. She has revisited all of the statutes and rules with respect to supervision and reread those as well. The question before the board is whether that would be acceptable as meeting the requirements. If so, does it meet the requirements in total or does it meet the requirements partially? And if not, further direction on how to assist Ms. Augustin to satisfy her non-disciplinary order.
It seems to me like she's worked pretty hard on complying with us. My inclination would be to... Go ahead, Dr. King.
You go.
Okay. So I think given the work, especially the extra effort she's gone to go read documents and discussions about supervisory issues, I think I'm inclined to view that as substantial compliance and I don't know what we do. Do we close the order or accept it?
It's a non-disciplinary order. As far as I understand it, Mr. Harris, correct me if I'm wrong. If you find that this would meet the requirements, then you would just direct staff to count that towards meeting her requirements. And then as a non-disciplinary order, once compliance has been established, then staff sends out a termination letter since it's non-disciplinary.
Then I would move that we do that.
Yeah, Josh, my only question was, do we have to amend the non-disciplinary board order to say it doesn't have to specifically be Arizona specific and then say that these things are okay, or can we just accept what she's done?
What would Mr. Harris with
this way? Yeah, what's the cleanest way to do it, Mr. Harris?
Yeah, I like Judy's approach. Just if you're okay just accepting what she did in lieu of what was set forth in the and then the minutes will serve as the modification, if you will.
The documents that she provided from the APTA House of Delegates really was exactly what we wanted her to learn or to relearn. And so I do feel that it does comply with the intent.
I agree.
Okay. Is that an actual motion?
I believe
mine was an actual motion. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And Dr. Vecchio, did you second that?
Yes.
Okay. Okay.
Thank Who you. Did the first?
Mr. Barton.
Thank you.
Then if you're ready for the question, Dr. Bastillo, moved and seconded to direct staff to accept Ms. Augustin's activities to satisfy the supervision terms of her, the continuing education in supervision terms of her non-disciplinary order in lieu of the verbiage in the order itself, to satisfy all of the terms. Dr. Bastillo.
Yes.
Dr. King. Dr. King, you're muted.
Yes. Yep.
Mr. Leone.
Yes.
Mr. Greer.
Yes.
Mr. Barton.
Yes.
That motion passes.
Great. Okay, so to move on here, we have case 2373, Jennifer Luther, PT.
So at its meeting on September 29th, 2023, case 2373, Jennifer Luther, PT, was presented as an initial review, during which the board expressed concern regarding the allegations and Ms. Luther's ability to safely and competently practice physical therapy. The board then voted to offer Ms. Luther an interim consent agreement to not practice under her license and to undergo a fitness for duty evaluation. Due to Ms. Luther's noncompliance with her interim consent agreement, at its meeting on December 12, 2024, the board voted to remand the case to a formal hearing. In the interim, Ms. Luther expressed her desire to voluntarily surrender her Arizona PT license during a phone conversation with Ms. Mindy Richardson. As a result, staff drafted the consent agreement for voluntary surrender of license, which was provided to Ms. Luther on February 20th of this year. Ms. Luther signed that consent agreement on March 13th, which is now presented for board review and possible approval. At this time, the board may choose to accept Ms. Luther's consent agreement for voluntary surrender of her license, or may proceed with the formal hearing as voted on December 12th, 2024, or take other action as the board deems necessary.
Thank you.
I think if we're headed for surrender in a formal meeting anyway, may as well accept her surrender. So I would move that we accept her surrender of her license.
Second.
Any other discussion? Okay, I think we're ready.
It's been moved to accept Ms. Luther's voluntary surrender of her license pursuant to her signed consent agreement. Dr. Bastillo?
Yes.
Dr. King?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
That motion passes.
Okay. We'll move on to case 2369, Teresa O'Malley.
This is also a case of a signed voluntary surrender. The initial review for case 2369, Teresa O'Malley, PTA, was heard by the board at its December 12, 2023 meeting. The board voted to offer Ms. O'Malley a consent agreement for 9 months of probation to complete 12 hours of continuing education in the areas of documentation for 6 hours, billing for 3 hours, and supervision for 3 hours, focused specifically on the PT-PTA relationship. If the consent agreement was not signed, Ms. O'Malley would be invited to an informal hearing. Ms. O'Malley was not present at her initial review. In her investigative summary, Ms. Richardson, board investigator, shared that Ms. O'Malley had reported she was not currently working as a PTA but wished to retain her certificate. This was confirmed again in an email from Ms. O'Malley dated January 2nd of 2024. However, after receiving a copy of the drafted consent agreement, Ms. O'Malley emailed on March 8, 2024, that she had changed her mind and requested to voluntarily surrender her PTA certificate instead. So provided for the board review was a signed copy of the consent agreement for voluntary surrender of her certificate. The board may choose to accept this signed consent agreement for voluntary surrender or may proceed to an informal hearing as voted on December 12, 2024, or take other action as deemed necessary.
I'd move to surrender.
Any further discussion? Okay, I think we can vote.
It's been moved to accept Ms. O'Malley's voluntary surrender of her certificate pursuant to her signed agreement. Dr. Bastillo.
Yes.
Dr. King.
Yes.
Mr. Leone.
Yes.
Mr. Greer.
Yes.
Mr. Barton.
Yes.
That motion passes.
Okay, so now we're on to case 2131, case 2228, Stephen Kempton.
Dr. Bastillo, I'll be muting and turning my video off. I'm confused.
Thank you.
So at the February 27th, 2024 meeting, the board reviewed Mr. Kempton's compliance with his consent agreement. The board requested that his compliance with his consent agreement and possible modification of its terms be agendized for the board's March 26, 2024 meeting. Mr. Kempton provided details and attached documents regarding a medical chaperone training program offered by PBI Education. At staff's request, Mr. Kempton also provided a link to the PBI course, where it was discovered that separate editions of the course are offered for general and mandated chaperones. The resume of a physical therapy aide who Mr. Kempton currently employs was also submitted for board review. ARS 32-2001-12, section 12 states, and I quote, physical therapy aide means a person who is trained under the direction of a physical therapist and who performs designated and supervised routine physical therapy tasks. end quote. As Mr. Kempton's employee at Gateway Physical Therapy, it could be assumed that Mr. Kempton was responsible for training this individual. Mr. Kempton's informal hearing occurred at the board's March 28, 2023 meeting, where the board voted to offer him a consent agreement, which included, among other terms, the continuation of a chaperone for all female patients, monitoring, therapy, and various continuing education courses. Mr. Kempton was represented at that time by his attorney, Ms. Kimberly Kent. On March 29, 2023, the day following the informal hearing, Ms. Kent emailed board staff requesting clarifications on the ethics course, that was the probe or PBI course, ordered, as well as monitoring company to, quote, get additional information as soon as possible so Dr. Kempton has as much information as needed when we actually get the written consent draft, end quote. She further requested, quote, please let the board know I am wholly committed to ensuring absolute clarity regarding this proposal, end quote. Staff replied on April 3rd, 2023 with links to both affiliated monitors and PBI education websites where Mr. Kempton and Ms. Kent had the opportunity to research the terms ordered by the board prior to receiving the drafted consent agreement. Emails of that nature were attached for your review. At this time, Mr. Kempton's chaperone was already in place. The drafted and unsigned consent agreement was delivered for consideration on April 4th, 2023. Mr. Kempton's signed consent agreement was returned on his behalf by his attorney, Ms. Kent, on April 28th, 2023. This was 1 month after the informal hearing. To ensure the board has a complete record of Mr. Kempton's current compliance to date with the terms of his consent agreement, the table provided in your records was updated, and Mr. Kempton's most current monitoring and therapist reports were included. That includes a monitoring report dated March 11, 2024, and a therapist report dated March 10, 2024. It should be noted that the monitoring report was dated the 11th because the 10th was an actual Sunday in this month. The board is also provided with chronological memos and attachments from all previous board meetings. So the table was updated and the attachments provided, and I'm available to answer any questions about that. But this matter is now for your review and consideration.
Thank you for the report there. So, Mr. Kempton, it seems like things are going pretty well for you here, with the monitoring and things like that. Is the biggest concern at this point, with the chaperone that you have?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, yes, the chaperone and the monitoring reports. Are you guys hearing an echo, or is it just my computer?
No, it's there. It should be fixed now, though.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So the chaperone and the monitoring reports, Mr. Kempton?
Yes, sir.
I understand the issue about this chaperone. You would like us to approve, I'm not going to try to say her name. How do you say it? Kel?
Yeah, that's just her given name. It's not short for anything. That's her name, Kel.
And you'd like us to approve Kel to be the chaperone upon completion of the PBI medical chaperone, or has she completed already?
She has not, no.
Okay. But that's your request, is upon the completion of the PBI course, she be approved as a chaperone?
Correct.
And then what was the issue for the monitoring reports?
I don't have a necessary issue with the reports specifically, just the frequency of them.
And what would you suggest?
I would suggest going every 3 months, quarterly. There's just the, I mean.
And that's primarily related to the cost?
Yeah.
Would Kel be your only chaperone? Would she be the only one there as the chaperone?
It wasn't planned to be that way. I was supposed to keep, but the current chaperone that I have just on last Thursday gave me a 3-week notice and that she is pretty much tired of being a chaperone, would like to practice, and so she gave me a 3-week notice last Thursday.
Okay.
And so, I could try to actively search and try to find another chaperone, but as of this point, she would be the only chaperone.
And she's full time there with you?
She is, yes.
So what would your plan be if she's busy? What, I think we talked about this last month. Because a lot of times the aides, you know, also help with patient care. So what is your plan as far as making sure she's available to be with you at all times when you're with a female patient?
The schedule due to this whole complaint and everything, my schedule has lightened up significantly and I have another aide at this time. But I would never practice work with a female patient if she wasn't there. And if the schedule started to pick up busy enough, then I would try to, then I would hire another, chaperone per the board up with the board approval. Or hire another tech.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Kempton, how long have you worked with Kel from the beginning?
She went to PT Tech school, and then she interned with me. And then after her intern, she did some other stuff, and a couple years later, I was in need of some more help, and so I contacted her. I would guess I do not know the exact date, but she's been with me a few years.
And Mr. Kempton, just to confirm, so she started with you, then she went somewhere else, and now she's back working for you?
No, she did not. She was an intern. She was an intern. She was in PT Tech school in high school, and she went to EBIT, and she went to the PT Tech schooling for PT Tech, and so she interned, and then her intern finished up. And at that point, I didn't have a position available for her.
Okay, understood. So she actually didn't even work for you. She was an intern there, and then at some point she went out into the world and then came back eventually to work for you.
Correct. Yeah, she wanted to work for me. I didn't have a position for her at the time.
Any other questions for Mr. Kempton?
Mr. Kempton, do you have a personal relationship?
Say that again.
With this PTA? Do you have any kind of a personal relationship outside of work with this PTA?
No.
The tech.
Mm-hmm. This tech.
Or tech, I'm sorry.
No.
I think by that, Mr. Barton, you might be asking, do you know her family? Do you know her parents? Is there any sort of social contact at all with anyone she knows, she interacts with?
Her parents have been into the office before, you know, to bring her stuff. I've met her parents, but her mom actually used to be a patient years ago. But But no, I don't, I have not interacted with them outside of the office here.
Thank you.
I have a question for staff. Have we reviewed the PBI course on medical chaperones?
Taken the course, you mean?
Have we reviewed it or?
We read the documentation that was provided on the PBI website.
Is that the same stuff that we have?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have an opinion, Judy, on whether this is an acceptable replacement?
Not really. That's going to have to be the board's decision. There were two varieties of chaperones that there were courses offered for. I couldn't really at face value determine what the difference was, but one of them is specifically for those chaperones that are ordered by the board. The other is just a medical chaperoning process to probably protect practitioners by having an additional person in a room, you know, for whatever various reasons. But there is on the PBI's website, there is a specifically called out separate version for, those that have been ordered in a board order type of scenario.
Mr. Kempton, do you know in your February 27 email, do you know which course you copied from?
I believe it was the court ordered one. I'm not 100% positive, but I thought I checked the medical chaperone option.
And Mr. Greer, in the information that's provided on the website, it wasn't immediately or abundantly clear that there was a distinction in the coursework or the course itself. I was trying to search to see if there was a difference, what the difference was, and that's not really identified, whether that's a mistake on PBI's site for, you know, not making that distinction. I don't know. But at this point, the documentation provided on the website is very similar, if not identical, between the two, but they do have the different registrations.
Mr. Kempton, and can you describe just who your current chaperone, the one that gave three gave you notice, was?
Can I describe?
Yeah. How old is she? What does she do? I know she's got some training. Can you just describe what that is? So
she's a physical therapy assistant. Before being a chaperone, she had I'm not exactly sure, 2 or 3 years of experience as practicing. She is 30 or 31 years old. What else?
No, that's sufficient. And Kel's okay. Significantly younger, about 23, 24 years old, approximately.
Yes, early 20s, yes.
This question might be more for staff or Mr. Kempton, but are you still submitting copies of your schedule showing the female patients that you're scheduled with, and then the chaperone is co-signing that they have seen you with those patients? Okay, yes. And that would continue, is that correct?
Yes.
Thank you.
Dr. King, that information is submitted by Mr. Kempton to his monitor at this point, who includes that information in their monitoring evaluation, I should say.
Got it.
And I don't know if the board is aware of this. The file on Mr. Kempton's case is fairly lengthy, and the board the consent agreement is the last attachment. But just for convenience, we've also uploaded the consent agreement as its own file in the record.
Yeah. Thank you.
I don't have any more questions for Mr. Kempton. I think I'm ready for a discussion with the board, though.
Mm-hmm.
I'd agree. Agreed.
Well, would you like to lead us off then, Mr. Greer?
My initial thoughts are I don't know if we can grant both requests today. I have been impressed with, you know, we got off to a real shaky start, but I have been impressed with the monitoring reports. I think they are helpful to us and Mr. Kempton in advising compliance, ensuring compliance. I understand his concerns. Our concern is not necessarily his financial success, but I do take that into consideration. I think if we do authorize a chaperone, and I'm inclined to say yes, I would want to wait a little bit on the on removing the monitoring report. And to keep, you know, I know Mr. Kempton loves coming to these meetings probably more than I do, but the way I would think about it would be, you know, I would approve the monitor, Mr. Kempton, the proposed monitor upon passage of the PBI course.
The chaperone.
I would continue the monitoring at least for the next 2 months to make sure there's no issues with that. And then assuming those monitoring reports are consistent with what we're getting right now, I would recommend going forward, beginning, that would be in, so March, April, beginning in May, to switch to quarterly. So we'd get an April report, we'd get a May report, and then I would say we'd get an August report. That would be kind of what I'm thinking. I think that strikes a balance between Mr. Kempton's concerns and our legitimate concerns as well. So that's what I'm thinking.
Mr. Greer, just to make sure, you're saying that would happen automatically. He wouldn't have to come back to another meeting to do that?
I would do it. I would propose it with negative notice. It would happen unless the staff brings it to our attention, and then we would change our minds. I think that's kind of how I envision it happening.
Okay. I would second that motion.
I don't want to make a motion yet. I this is a hypothetical.
Oh, you don't want to make a motion. Okay.
I don't want to cut off the discussion prematurely.
I'm not opposed to the chaperone and her going through the chaperoning course and being his chaperone. I think that strikes a good balance for some of his needs. I'm in agreement that we should have at least two more monthly monitoring reports. And my thought would be to then go to every other month for a couple of times before we go to quarterly. Just to make sure that everything stays going along well.
Yeah, Karen, I'm with you on that time frame. Totally hear what you're saying, Mr. Greer, and support that. I'm just not quite comfortable yet going to quarterly, especially reading that he's still having some billing issues. And also, because the chaperone report is given to the monitor, if it's only given to him quarterly with a new girl who's chaperoning, for me, that's a little bit risky. So I'd like to keep a little closer eye on how she's doing as a chaperone, as a newly trained chaperone with him a little more frequently. Maybe June. Yeah, so maybe we get something in July versus June and just make sure she's feeling that she's following all the protocols that we have set up to protect the public and the female patient. So does that make sense? So I just would rather, the monitoring, it looks like he's doing great, but because the chaperone reports are sent to the monitor, I would like to not do that quarterly quite yet until she's established and feels like she's got a good frame and voice.
And I agree with you, Dr. King. That's why I had suggested at least 2 months of continued monthly monitorings before we'd switch to quarterly.
But, well, she hasn't taken this course yet. I don't know how long it will take her to take it, right? But we're at the end of March, and she hasn't taken it yet.
So I think Mr. Kempton's very incentivized to get her to pass it in the next 3 weeks.
So it's only a two-hour course online.
Yeah. Oh, that's not much. Okay.
It's 1.5 hours didactic online, and then it's a 30-minute quiz.
Test,
yeah.
I think they call it an exam.
Exam. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
And I don't know if there's a contingency if she doesn't pass.
That's not going to be our problem. That's going to be Mr. Kempton's problem. So I'm going to break this up. I'm going to move that we approve a modification to the consent agreement with regards to the chaperone, specifically that we approve the proposed chaperone pending completion of the PBI medical chaperone training program. That's my motion.
Second. Any other discussion on the chaperone?
Mr. Greer, do you want the chaperone training program to be specifically the board ordered version of it?
If there's a distinction, yes. I'm not sure there is. But if there is a distinction, yes.
I anticipate that the certificate would say which it was. There's no distinction in fee or anything of that nature.
Yeah. And so whichever one you like the best, Judy, that's the one I'm ordering.
Okay.
And as part of this, the way I think we go going forward, because I don't think there's a consensus on the monitoring, except I think we do agree that we want to keep the monitoring in place for at least 2 more months, is I don't think we do anything with the monitoring. And I guess if Mr. Kempton wants us to re-agendize this for it would be our May meeting, I'm happy to do that. If he would just want to wait and see and re-agendize it and come to us for a different time, I defer to him on when he'd like us to reconvene, because I don't think there's an agreement on changing the monitoring, except everyone agrees that we don't need to do anything for 2 months.
Yeah.
And then we'd be talking about it in a more concrete and not be, you know, anticipating what we do. So that's kind of where I'm thinking on that one.
Should we vote on the chaperone first? So let's do that, Judy.
I think that's appropriate. Yeah.
Vote on the,
One question for Harris. Mr. Harris, does this, so the board is, through this motion, approving this specific chaperone pending successful completion of the training program. Is there a need or a need to vote on, or what do we do with this with respect to the terms of the existing order? Are we modifying the terms of the order? Should something happen in the future with this chaperone or another chaperone have to come to light?
Well, I think there's a couple of different ways that the board can approach it. One, they can completely amend, you know, the consent agreement, the terms of that part of the consent agreement, have Mr. Kempton re-execute it and incorporate it by reference into the remainder of the terms of the CA. That would probably be the safest route to take. And what we could do, Judy, is work on.
What's the other option?
The other option is basically send a letter to Mr. Kempton, indicating that, you know, at this meeting, the board modified the consent agreement in the following, you know, regards. And then incorporate that letter with the consent agreement, attach that letter to the consent agreement. It's a little less informal. If there's ever any issues, it can, you know, there's more likelihood that challenges could be raised.
I tend to like the second option better because the way I see this is an exception to the order. If, you know, Kel decides she wants to go to PT school and leaves, Mr. Kempton, as I see it, is now back finding someone compliant with the existing order or coming to us and proposing another alternative. I think that's how I see it. Okay. What I'm not intending, and I don't think I'd be comfortable in doing today, but I might be comfortable in 6 months, is saying, hey, anyone who passes this course is approved as a, I'm not there yet. I'm comfortable with this person right now. I'm not comfortable with anyone who passes this course.
And in light of those comments, Josh, one of the things that we can do is work on a very tight and specific letter memorializing that while keeping all of the terms and conditions of the original consent agreement in place. And that this just is for this specific situation. And should anything change, then the original terms, are in effect.
That's what I'd like. Mr. Kempton, any objection to that?
No.
Then that's what we'll do.
Assuming this motion passes.
Correct. Details.
You know, I'm Dr. King, Dr. Pastillo. I'm not sure they're on board.
You'll just have to wait and see how we vote. Just kidding.
Any further discussion? Okay, I think we're ready here, Judy.
Okay. First, did we have a second? Mr. Barton, is that you seconding me?
I think that was me, yes.
Okay. Okay, so it's been moved and seconded to modify this the consent agreement with regards to the chaperone, specifically that the board approves the proposed chaperone, who is a PT aide employed by Mr. Kempton, pending successful completion of the PBI chaperone training program. All other terms of Mr. Kempton's consent agreement remain unchanged.
You said PT aide, not PTA, correct?
I did, correct. Aide or tech. It's written as aide in statute, so. Dr. Bastillo.
Yes.
Dr. King.
Yes.
Mr. Leone. Mr. Leone is recused. Mr. Greer.
Yes.
Mr. Barton.
Yes.
That motion passes.
Quick question, so the board will send me a letter about talking about what we just had, and then I need to sign that and send it back to Judy.
I don't know that your signature will be required.
Oh, it's not? Oh, okay.
It'll just be a letter acknowledging this is and allowing you to proceed.
Okay.
And Mr. Kempton, I wouldn't encourage you, because we're on a 3-week time frame here, based on what you told us, I wouldn't wait for that letter. I would have her get going now, because if she doesn't pass for some reason or moves to Ecuador or whatever, you're going to need to find someone else.
Correct. I mean, I'm in the...
And then what would you like us to do on the other part? Would you like us to agendize this for the May meeting, or would you want to wait and see?
No, May would be good. I'll try to get her to take that class this week sometime. And so I may try to find another, so I'm not just completely reliant on this one person, Kel. So I'm not completely reliant on her. If she gets sick or if she goes on vacation or something like that, then technically I cannot see female patients. And so if the board is okay with it, if I try to find someone that I could get part-time or something that I could present to the board, and that chaperone could go through the course and maybe be approved as well, is that something that I might be able to do?
We'll take a look at whatever you bring to us.
Okay.
I'm not going to promise one way or the other.
Okay.
I'll tell you if it's your sister, the answer is probably going to be no.
Totally understand.
Probably going to be no.
No, I try to find another
trained PT. Best friend's daughter. It's probably going to be no.
Yeah, but, no, I understand. I understand where you're going with that. I try to find or go on Indeed or Monster or something like that and try to find another trained PT tech or aide that has experience.
So, do we need a motion to put this on the agenda for May, or just note it?
If it's okay, we can just do that at the end of the meeting under future agenda items.
Thank you.
Okay. So,
letters drafted.
Great. So we can move on then to item number 12, board business and reports.
I believe we.
Okay, so the first is an update.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good luck.
Thank you, Mr. President.
First report is an update on Senate Bill 1267.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it's an update regarding Senate Bill 1267 and Senate Bill 1255. Both have passed the Senate and were heard by the House Health and Human Services Committee on Monday, March 18th, 2024. Senate Bill 1255 is the board's continuation bill sponsored by Senator T.J. Shope, which received a due pass with 7 ayes, 1 nay, 0 not voting, and 2 absent. Senate Bill 1267 is legislation amending the board statutes, also sponsored by Senator T.J. Shope and supported by the Arizona APTA chapter. Senate Bill 1267 was given a due pass amended with 3 ayes, 2 nays, 0 not voting, and 2 absent. Senate Bill 1267 was amended to remove the ordering of labs, which amends page 2, lines 28 through 37 of the Senate engrossed version, which was part of your packet. The following draft language was provided to you as well. It basically leaves Section 13A unchanged. It includes examining, evaluating, and testing persons who have mechanical, physiological, and developmental impairments, functional limitations and disabilities, or other health and movement-related conditions in order to determine a diagnosis, a prognosis, and a plan of therapeutic intervention and to assess ongoing effects of intervention. Amended to say now, including ordering imaging, period. So the original proposed language included ordering labs as well. That language has been removed. Additionally, Kayla Black, PT-DPT, chair of the Arizona chapter of the American Physical Therapy Association State Government Affairs Committee, who is here today and able to address questions should you have them, has supplied for your review 3 recently requested changes to the Senate engrossed version. And those matters included some items that the board had previously heard and reviewed. And there is a section on page 2, line 21, from on-site definition that included telehealth as on-site definition that should be instead with general supervision, not for on-site supervision, as well as another section that required or that the language had overlooked the idea that the intention of the bill itself is to change the status of PTAs from certified to licensed. There was one error where certified was not caught. So I believe Kayla has submitted those requests as well. So that information plus the engrossed version is available and provided. There were a couple of areas that staff in reviewing this document highlighted for consideration by the board. But the matter is before you. If there's any kind of discussion about those changes, what has occurred, any concerns of the boards, we're happy to engage. And like I said, Kayla Black is here as well to discuss or to be a resource.
Any questions?
It's actually the very last lines of the document itself, the page 26 of the Senate engrossed version that I just want to bring to the board's attention, because it's at this point a little bit unknown how it would affect the board, but it's specific to the language that indicates that the PTA certificates, certified PTA will maintain that status until renewal, at which time the board will issue a license. So that is a little bit unknown at this point, simply because we don't know yet if this bill passes, when it would be put into place, when it would be law. We are facing a renewal. So depending upon when the legislature ends their session and when this becomes law is going to impact whether that renewal is this upcoming July, August renewal or the next renewal. I think we can all understand that it happening this session for this renewal will be a little bit touch and go. We'll have some system updates to do in a very swift manner. That there is that potential. So I just wanted to make sure that the board is aware of that. We will be working with our software provider to try to manage that. But again, we don't know and we don't have the go ahead until we know whether this passes and the timeline. So Kayla has also raised a hand as well.
Yeah, Judy, I just, you know, obviously I can't share anything related to timeline, but just so the board is aware, and I should say thank you so much for having me back again. So the board is aware, there is a financial implication, of one of the items on page 26, it's like line one. There is a chance that may be taken out because Medicaid came to the hearing and said that this would cost approximately $216,000, I believe. So because there's a financial implication, we may need to pull that last minute because we don't want it to pass and then go all the way up to the governor and get vetoed for the financial implication. So the intention of the Dorn Policy Group is to investigate that and kind of push this along. So this really isn't going to get pushed forward in any way. So my thought is that this potentially may be going through the rest of the process towards the end of the legislative session. You know, so I know that from your standpoint isn't ideal. You'd rather know sooner than later. But there are some other things that are going on that it will likely be the later portion.
And typically, unless the legislature makes some sort of move differently, typically any of the legislation that is passed in a legislative session, and correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. Harris, but it typically goes into effect 90 days after the legislature sine die. So it's even if this is pushed to the end, we won't know one way or the other until this is signed and all the way through. So, we'll be sitting on pins and needles to try to figure out how to manage this. So, and it's entirely possible because what this would require if this does pass is all forms, all everything from the many, many, many years that the license/certification has been in place is changing everything through license. Obviously, that would be an implementation plan that would roll out. Not everything would be changed immediately. We would have to focus on those issues that need immediate attention and then address the rest as time goes on.
Anything to keep the renewal process interesting?
Always. It won't be enough that it's a brand new system again. we're crossing everything.
Just making sure we keep you on your toes.
Thank you for that. I'm gonna have to stop the world.
Any other discussion on the Senate bills?
Kayla, do you know if this has been agendized for any further review or they're still talking about the amendments?
To my knowledge, it hasn't been agendized yet because Senator Shope is kind of looking at financials. I guess a lot of the bills that he is a part of, it's like 200,000 here, 200,000 there. Like they aren't anything that's big, but it kind of adds up from a financial standpoint. So that's the latest update I have is that they're looking into that. And it would probably be a pretty last minute on the floor amendment to remove the language that relates to authorizing more visits for patients with Medicare and Medicaid. Again, on your version, it's page 27.
And another thing along that same vein is implications to also update the AZ law exam, the jurisprudence exam. I don't know to what effect that will have. I have notified the FSBPT that this is in process, that this bill is maneuvering the system and at least alerted them. But again, that's a change that's going to take a little bit of time. We require that for every licensee. So I don't know how impactful that might be in terms of scores or what kind of time frame that changed those questions. But that'll certainly be something that needs to be addressed swiftly.
It might be a good time for us to think about taking a look at the JAM for Arizona versus, you know, writing our own. Just a thought.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And if mm-hmm. should the board want any kind of presentation from FSBPT in that regard, I'm sure it can be arranged. Kayla, do you have those requests for edits? Are those pretty certain to go through, or is that something that?
Yeah, those were I submitted those last Wednesday, so that's already been submitted to the attorney.
Okay.
Yeah, there were. I actually counted, so there were in addition to the change, the amendment that was made on the floor after that committee, and I can actually send it to you in an email if you'd like. So it's technically 5 changes. So it's line 1 that's inserting the definition that was on page 2 related to telehealth. And then page two is striking lines 13 and 14, which is where that definition was, including telehealth is defined by that section. Page two, line 21, striking on-site. Page 15, line 29, striking therapy, and making sure that it reads student physical therapist assistance. And then page 15, line 34, that was the correction where we missed that one certified and that is licensed. So all of those were submitted to the attorney for edits.
Can I ask you a super quick question about one of the other lines on page two?
Yep.
Line 20 is talking about physical therapist assistant means a person who meets the requirement of this chapter for licensure and who performs physical therapy procedures according to the physical therapy plan of care under the on-site supervision. So it doesn't say anything about general supervision for the PTA.
Yes. So essentially on-site is going to be removed from that. So line 21, so it'll just say under the supervision.
Okay. So that's another strike through. Okay.
Yep.
Thanks.
Yep.
Thanks.
Yeah, sorry, that was the page two, line 21.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the strike.
Thanks.
That one we caught a while ago, but somehow it didn't get updated. So I was actually shocked the day when I was like sitting there reading it. I was like, oh, there's a problem.
Yeah.
And it really just took some time with me explaining to the lobbyist and the attorney that was drafting it, because they were and I explained to them how general supervision actually works, and when they had the practical application of it, they understood why the telehealth had to move to general supervision and why that needed to come out of the definition of PTAs, because we certainly do not want to limit practice of any providers.
Yeah, thank you for all your hard work with this. It's not an easy process. It's very lengthy and time consuming and tedious reading. So thank you very much.
Sure. Thank you.
Are we?
Dr. King.
Okay, so can we move on at this point, or are we going to still?
I believe the board has any questions. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So we'll move on to the telehealth.
So at your February meeting, you had requested that board staff draft a substantive policy statement addressing the supervision requirements for physical therapist assistants working under general supervision as it related to the services that are rendered via telehealth. And the request was in response to the multiple public inquiries that the board staff receive about this topic, and also as it related to the review you've had of several cases. So Dr. Sinish and I worked to produce what you have in your packets as a draft of a substantive policy statements. We reviewed the current telehealth guidelines as stipulated, actually the telehealth statutes, and also the guidelines that were provided by the advisory group, and our professional FSBPT provided some guidelines, as well as existing practice guidelines that we work under. And so we really wanted to try and, you have to remember too that telehealth, while some of the cases that we're reviewing primarily were in the pediatric arena, we have to remember that telehealth is going to be for all patients in really potentially all settings. So, for example, you could have an adult that had an ankle sprain and may opt to have their therapy in their home. So we had to, when we put this together, consider really all age groups and all home care settings. So I don't know, Dr. Senish, do you want to add anything to the overview?
I think you covered it pretty well there so far.
And as well, we wanted to limit this to the fourth visit since that seemed to be the issue that has bubbled to the surface and needed the most clarification. We didn't want to expand beyond that. So that's what you have in front of you. And I guess after discussion, the board, correct me if I'm wrong, Mark, but the board could adopt this and have that available to the public as published as with our other, we have other substantive policy statements that are published on our website.
That is correct, Mindy.
So we're happy to answer any questions or just open it up for discussion. Mm-hmm.
I think you guys all the work you guys did.
Sorry, Kelly.
It's hard to clarify. So thank you. I thought it looked really good.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you hit the big bullet points that needed to be addressed and put it in language that people can understand. And so that's very well done.
I suspect we'll continue to get some complaints or issues around the fourth visit being supervisory versus a reevaluation via telehealth. But you did put in there that some of the stipulations are around the third party payer. So hopefully the licensees will understand what that means.
Right.
Did you have any thoughts, Giovanni?
I think it reads very well. Am I echoing? Oh, there you go. I think it reads very well. I think it hits on all the points that I've received questions on for sure. So I like the way it's well written.
I'll move that we adopt the policy as written.
Second.
Who kicked Dr. Pastillo out?
It was the echo.
It gives me a minute to take the notes here. So
are we still echoing?
I don't know. Are we echoing? Nope, doesn't appear to be.
Wow, how nice. Sorry about that, everybody.
Okay, so it has been moved and seconded to adopt the substantive policy statement, the Arizona supervision requirements via telehealth. Dr. Bastillo?
Yes.
Dr. King?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
That motion passes.
And so then we'll go ahead and publish that on the website. And then do we like do banners or anything that talk about new policies that have been adopted? Or is that people just have
this
to find
the
it?
First, this is the first that we've seen, so I can place a banner on the front rolling of the website. We can potentially send out emails. We do have to draft an email. Hopefully we're ready for licensees to start adding their updating their personal information, their employer information on the new platform. So we can also involve that as well. So
will this just live under the resources supervision area?
This will be under the supervision area. This will be under, there's substantive policy statement. There's a page that has the substantive policy statements along with the ethics. It's linked on in the frequently requested information block on the homepage. You can get to it from the statutes and rules page using the laws, laws documents on the right hand side. And so there's a variety of ways that it can be accessed. And I'll also, if we put it in the banner, I'll also link it in the banner as well.
Okay. Awesome.
So then if we're ready to move on, Dr. Bustillo,
yes.
The next item is with regard to rescheduling the, potentially rescheduling the September 24th, meeting. The, I will be on vacation from September 17th through September 25th. I will be, taking my very first trip to France that my daughters are dragging along old mom on. So, hence a meeting on the 25th is going to be a bit of a challenge. So we're requesting that we edit the September 24th meeting to October 1st. Based on the absent November meeting, the October monthly meeting is pushed back anyway. So this would still provide a 4-week break in between the two meetings.
Sounds good to me.
I'm fine with that. There's a chance that I'm gone on the first, but it's if I'm gone on the first, I'm also gone on the 24th. So
I'm good with the date change too.
I can do it.
Fine with me.
Perfect. Do we have a motion?
A move that we change.
I motion that we move.
Go ahead.
Go ahead, Dr. Seale. It's all you.
I move that we reschedule the September 24th, 2024 meeting to October
1st,
2024. Second. It's been moved and seconded to reschedule the September 24th, 2024 meeting to October 1st, 2024. Dr. Bustillo?
Yes.
Dr. King? Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
And I do believe I heard Dr. King say yes to that.
Yes, sorry, yes.
Thank you. That motion passes. Next up is the February 2024 financials. Any questions on that information? Discussions, concerns, thoughts? Okay. Next up is the licenses and certificates that were processed in the month of February. Any questions there? Okay. Future agenda items?
Just Mr. Kempton.
Okay. And that was for the May meeting, correct?
Yes.
Do we want to try to get the FSBPT to do a presentation for us then too at some point?
We can certainly request it.
Yes, please. And then Judy, just an update. Where are we at as far as the FSBPT and requests for ADA accommodations?
So that's the alternate approval process. It's been submitted to SPO, the procurement. They drafted a contract and that contract was submitted months ago to FSBPT, who is waiting yet for their lawyer to give them feedback. So SPO is continuing to try to work with FSBPT. Jeff and I have been in conversation it's hinging on the lawyer's, you know, potential edits to that contract. At this point, last I heard, we are anticipating that, we may have some feedback from the lawyer potentially by the end of next week, I think was the last date that was placed out there. So we are purely in waiting mode.
Okay. Do I need to agendize that at a future agenda for that update, or can we just include those comments in this meeting minutes?
I think it's just been part of the record right now.
Okay. Thank you.
The audio record. So we're looking at the FSBPT presentation regarding the potential of any potential to switch to a jam, right? That's what we're looking for. Okay.
Yes, please.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Anything else? All right. Well, then I believe Dr. Basile, we're at everybody's favorite point, adjournment. Do we have a motion to adjourn?
I move to adjourn.
Second. Third.
That took record time, just saying. Dr. It's been moved and seconded to adjourn. Dr. Bastillo.
Yes.
Dr. King.
Yes.
Mr. Leone.
Yes.
Mr. Greer.
Yes.
Mr. Barton.
Yes.
That motion passes and the meeting is adjourned at 12:59. The recording will end.